Hello and welcome to another episode of the Reinvent Health Podcast, the show where we dive into the topics that matter to your health, happiness, and everything in between. I'm your host, Nikki Robertson, and today we've got a conversation that is both insightful and empowering, especially for those navigating the often misunderstood world of women's health. Now, you might have heard of polycystic ovarian syndrome or PCOS, but what does it really mean for your body, your hormones, and your overall well-being? And why is it that so many women go undiagnosed? Well, that's exactly what we're going to unpack today. I'm thrilled to be joined by Karen Bester, Medical Training Manager at Lamell Research Laboratories. Karen has a wealth of experience in dealing with hormonal health, particularly in how it relates to skin. And believe me, if you've ever had to battle acne or any skin issues tied to PCOS, you'll want to listen in. As a nutritionist, I have a specific interest in how what we eat directly affects the endocrine system. So as we plan our festive meals, it's important to raise awareness about the significance of nutrition concerning polycystic ovarian syndrome. In this discussion, we'll shed some light on how your nutritional choices can impact and potentially trigger these symptoms. We'll be talking about the connection between PCOS and your skin, the latest treatments, and of course, some practical advice to help you manage the symptoms and live your best life. Whether you have PCOS, suspect you might, or just want to understand it a bit better, this conversation is one you won't want to miss. Let's begin with what PCOS is. How is it related to our lifestyle choices?
So it sounds so wide and out there, and this disease that I have, it's actually not a disease, it's a syndrome. Syndrome just means a lot of symptoms that aren't necessarily related to each other. So when we look at PCOS and you say it's a metabolic condition that has an effect on our hormones and leads to infertility, So when we go, and to me, it is such an interesting conversation to have, because we don't understand how integrated all our systems are in our body. We see them as loose standing. So you've got diabetes, and that's diabetes. So you can't eat sugar. You've got insulin resistance. Insulin resistance is a term that we've been using for probably about the last 20 or 30 years, I've heard it, but we don't really, you know, it's not something that you have to worry too much about. You've got insulin resistance, so you're going to struggle to lose weight. That was my link to it. You're infertile, you have pain in your legs, you grow a beard, you pick up weights and struggle to lose it. We all see those as different symptoms, but they're actually so integrated into each other. And what happens is, and we don't understand why, we don't understand what the trigger is. But for some reason, in some females, they have raised insulin. And that, so insulin is a hormone that links to a cell and allows that cell to use glucose. If your insulin is raised, it means that your cell's not using the insulin properly. So your glucose levels might be completely normal. Your body's still absorbing the glucose, and it's still making, it's still metabolizing. You're not going into acidosis or anything like that, but your insulin levels are raised, which means that the cells aren't receiving it properly. That raised insulin triggers a raising testosterone levels. Now, when your testosterone levels go up, that affects a whole lot of things. Your skin becomes oilier. It falls out like you're bald, or you grow strange hair. And initially, testosterone raised apparently it's really great because you're energized, it's our get out of bed hormone in females, you know. But the problem is it then starts to affect your menstrual cycle, because it starts to affect the ovary, and the ovary can't produce a proper ovum, doesn't release the egg. So you have little in your ovaries, you have little cells that nearly blow up and become water filled. So they become little cysts in your 28 day cycle. In the middle of the cycle, they pop, they release estrogen, they also release the little egg, and that estrogen has a negative feedback loop on testosterone. But when the testosterone's so raised, they stop working. And what we then start to see is these follicles that become cysts, and they become bigger and bigger and bigger. And sometimes they don't pop. Sometimes you land up in hospital. Because you've got an enormous cyst. That's one of the ways that it's diagnosed, and that then becomes an accumulation of symptoms that then results in infertility. Now, the kickback is that we see increasing weight, and you struggle to lose weight. Your body doesn't do very well with sugar. I'm sure you can talk about that much more than I can. So glucose becomes, added sugar, added carbohydrates become a problem. Your metabolism isn't really great. And what we also now see, so we see that many women with severe PCOS, and that's also a challenge. One of the reasons why it's not diagnosed is we see the symptoms separately, but also some of the symptoms can be very mild. Where other people will have, so I have a daughter with PCOS, I have a personal interest in it. Her body was always sore. Her mood was always bad. Her menstruations were always traumatic. She picked up weight and couldn't lose it. And of course, the more weight you pick up, the worse your mood is, the worse your weight, your whole cycle becomes. So it is such a multidimensional condition. Why is it important to have a look at it? Well, as a mom, I want my daughters to find it easy to fall pregnant and have babies. I want my daughter to feel energized and alive and well. I don't want myself and my daughters to have the risks that where I mean there are risks if your insulin is raised, your weight is raised, you have cardiac risks, you have endometrial cancer risks, you have a risk that your pancreas can burn out and you can then get type 2 diabetes. So that's really why we're very keen on having, at the moment, we really work on educating people so that it's diagnosed early, so that you don't have this vicious cycle of trauma that this condition actually brings to
Yeah.
women and their relationships.
Oh, the men suffer along with the women. When I see people come to me and they have been diagnosed, it's almost the husbands or the boyfriends who are going out of their minds with frustration because you really suffer. And what you said earlier about, the moods and the exhaustion and the body aches, and no one, I'm so glad you mentioned that because no one associates that with.
You're diagnosed with depression.
So often people are given an antidepressant and no one tests the hormones. I find that backward, absolutely backward, because it's fixing nothing and you're just creating other problems. So is it possible that somebody can have normal insulin levels but still have cystic ovaries?
Yes. So when we go and look at the diagnosis, we don't actually even look at insulin levels when we diagnose. You don't necessarily have to do that test. So let's look at the diagnosis. So there were a whole lot of doctors that went to Holland somewhere, and that's the Rotterdam criteria. So there are three things that we look for. So we look for very oily or acneic skin or male pattern hair growth. So if you grow a beard, or if you have sideburns, or if you grow, I've got a friend who grew hair on her neck, your chest, your back. If you're very hairy, but also we have to consider genetics. So I know Judy won't mind. One of our reps, she goes, "My mother had a moustache. I have the moustache. I'm Portuguese." Okay, all right. So that would, but that abnormal hair growth. And acne, of course, and especially acne that's resistant to treatment. So when we start doing peels and we do products and it just doesn't want to go, we start looking for PCOS. The second thing that we look for is irregular menstruation or no menstruation at all. So, and this is a conversation that I have with so many mommies because we go, yeah, but she's 15. Her menstruations are irregular. If she started menstruating at 13, her menstruations have to be regular by the time she's 15. You have to menstruate anything between 25, 28 days. If it extends over 38 days, or if you menstruate less than 8 times in a 12-month period, we need to start investigating. Or if you stop menstruating completely, or if you don't start menstruating at all, we have to look for PCOS. And then the third symptom is that we look for cysts on the ovary. So that you would need to go to a gynae for. Now, if you have two of those three, you have PCOS. Okay, so you can have no cysts, but you can have acne and irregular menstruation, then you have PCOS. You can have no acne, but you can have irregular menstruation and cysts, then you have PCOS. So we don't look at insulin levels before. We can, at that stage, I would already start looking at diet and lifestyle and adding myo-inositol. Myo-inositol is an ingredient that we sell that just helps with insulin. So it's an over-the-counter way to manage it. But that's not a priority.
Yeah.
Then I would still go and see an endocrinologist or a nutritionist or a dietitian and have a full blood workup. Because what I've found is that in many cases, we can, with diet and lifestyle and losing weight, we can start to menstruate regularly again. But there might be other challenges that aren't treating well. And for that, you need the blood levels. And especially when you've adjusted your diet, you've started gymming, you're eating I hate to say this, and I know you're going to kill me or throw me with something, but a lettuce leaf and a carrot for every meal, which is so wrong. You should be eating proteins, please. And you're not losing the weight, and you feel that your symptoms are getting worse. You have to go for medic. You know, you have to see a doctor.
Saying it is so common that people, that women are really, really not eating badly and they're not winning. It is heartbreakingly frustrating.
Yeah, and they're gymming and they're running and they, you know, and the and your and the kilos just pick up. Also, what I just want to say is be careful that you're not in perimenopause or in menopause.
Right.
Okay. So
that's
this
the
is
point.
Fertile females. It's a very good point because the symptoms look at the same. So if you're over 45, you might actually be going into menopause and you'll also have the same struggles, hair growth, acne, oily skin,
Yes.
weight gain, moodiness. You just have the added
Absolutely.
advantage of hot flashes and, you know, dizziness, I think, is probably the two symptoms that are less obvious in PCOS, but you know, the picture, and it's all related to male hormones. It's raised, or it's not an increase in that case. It's you've lost your estrogen. It went away with the ovaries, and now the testosterone is your major hormone. And so your body's running on testosterone. And sometimes it isn't. Sometimes it's running on cortisol, but that's why the symptoms look so much the same.
So two things. One is I spoke with a gynae oncologist a couple of months ago, and she said to me, if a woman's period is regular, 99% of the time, they're fine. They are fine. There's never going to be an issue. Your period is your first sign that something is wrong, and it's not always what you think. And I thought that was so wise because, and then you've got to start digging. And when you said blood tests, yeah, we look as from a functional medicine point of view, we look for things your GP wouldn't look for. And very often I get a phone call from GP saying, why did you test this? I'm like, but can't you see something's wrong here? Don't ask me why I tested it. Fix it or help this person. But you know, periods are our barometer of health. And if we are healthy, they will be regular. And yeah, if it's not really, like you said, if it's not regular by 15, if you've started menstruating at 13, that's early warning signs of things to come. But before we start diving into food, you mentioned cortisol and you mentioned, you know, women who literally starve themselves and are at the gym every day, sometimes twice a day, they're creating so much stress hormone. What is the role of cortisol and those I would say adrenal hormones are more the androgynous hormones. So how does raised cortisol influence our hormone expression?
So I'm not a specialist on cortisol levels, but as I understand, what I do know is that when we're stressed, our bodies, so in our female bodies, most of our hormones are actually produced by our adrenals. So our estrogen is produced by our ovaries. Our progesterone is produced by pituitary gland and testosterone. So when you, I have to think now, there's another one. Follicle stimulating hormone that's produced by your ovaries. All right, by the luteal phase of the ovary. So it's a phase where your one ovary is dying and it's stimulating another ovary. If that follicle stimulating hormone is down, we look for infertility and we look for perimenopause. So when you are stressed, you are producing much more cortisol and you are producing much more adrenaline. Now, if you think about adrenaline is your fight and flight. And this is why I always remind people always why their skins look bad when they fight, when they're stressed. When you're in fight or flight, your body's focused on lungs, heart, brain. It's not even focused on tummy. It doesn't want food. It just wants to get the blood to your heart so you can fight or you can run away. What it also does is with cortisol, and they work together. It's adrenaline, noradrenaline, and cortisol work together. The one makes sure that you don't burn too much food so that you have enough food to fight or flight. And that's cortisol, I think. So your weight gain becomes a problem when you're in a stressed situation. Now, some people, and it also relates to do you stress eat or don't you? What is your response? And I think that's genetically predetermined very much. So, Nikki, tell us about what you know about cortisol, because as I say, I'm not a probe on cortisol at all. I'm much more on hormones, the basic adrenals and female hormones.
So cortisol signals insulin resistance. So when your cortisol levels go up, you're just more inclined to manage your glucose badly. So what also happens with cortisol, the reason it goes up, you're not sleeping properly. And when you're not sleeping properly, you're going to crave sugar.
Yeah, no, that makes absolute sense. And it talks to that whole fact with there's this joke about I'm Irish. When I run, my body says, hold on to the weight. She's fighting, she's running away from a war. Hold on to the weight. And that exactly that is that, yeah, and you want to just you're not sleeping, you're eating more. And that's a PCOS, that's a PCOS nightmare. Because if you are, or if your insulin, so we back to the question. Sorry, I seem to be jumping around. Back to the question on are there females that don't have raised insulin? Yes, there are. But so it's about 20% of females with PCOS don't have insulin resistance, but they have an inert insulin resistance. So even though their insulin levels aren't high, their cells don't do well with insulin. And that's why we just say everybody, and you'll see when you look at your doctors as well, they give everybody metformin. It's like go on the pill and get metformin, which just it's astounding. Okay. But it is about managing that insulin resistance, helping the cell to produce to metabolize better. Because if we can help the cell to metabolize better, we'll get rid of that insulin. And when we lower the insulin, the androgens go down, your testosterone levels go down, and hopefully you will then automatically go into a normal ovulation cycle, which will mean that you'll go into a normal menstruation cycle. So in PCOS, we're very focused on menstruation and how regularly you menstruate. And then, of course, if you've got raised cortisol, you're not going to get that testosterone, I mean, the insulin down.
So, yeah, I mean, you mentioned metformin and the pill, and that's a stock standard treatment for most of these things. But I mean, the pill suppresses natural hormone expression, and I understand why you do it because you're desperate, and it does seem to create this regularity, this normal life. But if you're not doing the work at the same time and not correcting your lifestyle, one day it's going to stop working. And one day when you want to have kids, you're going to end up in that IVF clinic because you haven't corrected your upstream problem. And, there are many, many great doctors out there who will not do that. And there's great doctors out there who will because they're just trying to keep that patient happy. But I think if we can do anything through this kind of forum is to help people understand that, yes, use the pharmaceutical tools where
Yes.
appropriate, but still take responsibility
Yeah.
for doing the
And
work.
sometimes you will be on polypharmacy. Polypharmacy is lots of medicine. So my daughter's got resistant insulin resistance. It's taken us 18 months to sort it out. But she's still on a metformin alternative. She's now taking vitamin D3. She's on, selenium because they're worried about her thyroid, because thyroid also sometimes burns out with PCOS. What else does she take? Oh, and then she is on the pill, so she's not wanting to have babies yet. So, yeah, so we put her on the pill to keep her adrenals lower. That's so it's not to keep her in a cycle. It's just to get those the adrenal glands to just calm down and get the androgens down.
It's such a mess, and to unpack this is so psychologically difficult.
I think for me it is, it's such an, so we talk about PCOS as this diagnosis, but it is so individual. Every patient is going to have a different picture. And that's where I love the fact that we are working together with a person like you that's looking at functional medicine, because you really look at, you have to, so you have to cater to that person's needs. And that's also that, that's also where I find that going, so what do we eat and what do we drink? Depends on what your symptoms are, and it depends on who you are, So there's certain rules that we can apply, but it does vary depending on. You might do well with the odd piece of chocolate cake. My daughter, she eats a piece of chocolate cake. She will moan and groan for probably around 48 to 72 hours because her body is so sore, So, and she knows that. So sometimes she will have the chocolate cake, and sometimes she will walk past it and go, "It's my poison." And I think that's the big challenge.
But at least she's
Yeah,
aware.
no, she's become aware.
So as we're heading towards Christmas, this is disaster area for most of us, even if you don't have PCOS. And because many people are they're training really hard and they're trying to look after their health through the year, but we just know that come Christmas time, something happens and we lose our minds a little bit. And it doesn't have to be that way. You can still enjoy yourself, indulge slightly, and not get sick or set yourself back where you have to start from the ground up.
Yes.
What are your thoughts about, are there certain, what if a person is diagnosed with PCOS or not diagnosed with PCOS, but they might suspect that there's something going on? What are the clues? You mentioned the chocolate cake. What are those things that we're going to be confronted with that might give them a clue as to, like, oh, wait a minute, this is a problem for me? What are your thoughts?
So I think that for me, there are two things. The one is being aware. So we I struggle with my weight, so I'm talking to myself as well. Is I we sometimes shove things down our throats that we don't even realize that we're eating. It's like, oops, it jumped right into my mouth, so it is about being aware of who what you where you are right now. And it goes back nearly to mindfulness. Is that what am I feeling right now? Where am I feeling uncomfortable? What did I eat yesterday? Because it starts at breakfast. And it
Yes.
is important to track that for yourself. Do it for yourself. Do it. And this is where and also I don't want to load anything on somebody. I know that the nutritionists and the dietitians come and they go, write everything down and bring it to me so I can see what you're doing wrong. And that's like a it's like no, I will not. I do not want to have a look at this. But do it for you, because you will then be able to see, okay, I had too many carbs yesterday and my body's taking strain to, or too many processed carbs. It's not carbs, it's the processed foods. Or I had three glasses of wine, I could have had one, And so that is for me, regardless of if you have PCOS or if you have weight challenges or if you have a potential chronic disease, we should all just be doing that. Also, be aware of what's in your food, because if you start looking at labels, we read every label now. If it's not, unless it's in the veggie aisle, if it's processed, if it's
Exactly.
changed from its natural form, you have to read the label. I think you mentioned the other day, bread is supposed to have three ingredients: flour, water, and some form of raising agent. Look at your bread and what's in there. You know, there's sugar, there's glucose, there's preservatives, there's all kinds of things. And these all trigger inflammation that will affect your hormones. So the first thing is being aware. And the second thing is we have to plan. And I know how hard it is. I know that, you know, if you're a busy housewife, mother, bachelorette, you don't always have the. So we have staples in our house. We always have apples. We always have frozen berries. We always have yogurt. We always have eggs. We always have chicken breasts. And we always have mince. So those are sort of the staples. So that, like, when my daughter runs out and she's not sure what's going to, we do a bowl of yogurt with apple. And that's what she has just to start her day because her feeding day starts at 11. So she needs something then. So yeah, frozen berries. Berries are fabulous because they're not high in sugar and they're high in antioxidants, which your body really needs. So if you're eating berries, you can nearly eat unlimited amounts of those. Protein, extremely important. And I mean, I would love to say only grass-fed organic, but that's, you know, that gets expensive. But proteins are important. Have the good quality whey protein. Make a smoothie, you know. Because you need to feed your body well so that you don't crave the sugars. And then you also have to look at how your body works because I know that, you know, some people do, my daughter, for instance, does very well with a big breakfast and a dinner. She doesn't necessarily eat lunch, but she only eats from 11 till 6. So that's her feeding window. She's intermittent fasting, and that works well for her. And you know, so we then plan those meals that are and you know, keep it colorful and keep it interesting if you can. And it's hard. It's
Definitely.
really, really hard. You know. And the thing is that very much takeaway foods and grabbing something on the way is completely out. I think the best we can do is a Nando's chicken with their spinach. In restaurants, it's easier. Because you can go, I want what is in this? I want the steak, put the sauce on the side. You know, I want the salad without the dressing.
No, I love that. So yeah, I would agree with you completely. Takeouts are a disaster, and the more you can control for things and plan and just think it through yourself, you're already going to be doing fine. And you know, I really don't believe in dieting. I don't believe in deprivation or, you know, not participating. You know, one of the things that is so important is to ask your friends and family to support you through this. Say, this isn't a health issue I'm dealing with. This is what I need to achieve. Please help me here. You know, and that I think for a lot of people is a big issue because friends and family can be very disempowering or they can enable bad behavior because, well, they also want to drink and eat and they don't want to be the only one doing it. But I think, you know, if you put it on the table, it's
It's interesting how people become considerate as well. Is because you know we will, and also how people change their tastes. Because we've had like there's this one salad that I make that's got chicken and crushed like Doritos, like the corn chips, but the natural corn chips. So we get them from the Checkers. They don't have too much flour and sugar in them. And we've got people who are like, no, we want the corn chip salad. And it's actually so healthy. There's nothing in there. You know, it's like a homemade mayo with a little bit of yogurt and, you know, but it's loaded with, there's a lot of stuff in there. You know, so it's about finding alternatives. The sweetie thing, you know, I need something sweet. So it didn't work very well, but I've made a Christmas because it fell apart. I should put some xanthan gum in it. But I've made a Christmas cake with almond flour, and we still used raisins, but I added some date paste. So rather use date paste as your sweetener, just to, you know, so it's a more even glucose level. Look at your sugar alternatives, you know. You can make something really nice with cocoa cream and xylitol.
You can. And funny you mentioned the dates,
Really?
because they do not
Yeah.
raise, as sweet as they are, they don't affect glucose in the way you would think
Yeah.
they do. For a lot of people, and there's always going to be an outlier, but for most people, you can eat 3 or 4 dates and the glucose response is very moderate, and they are so sweet. And you just don't feel deprived. Also, dip that in dark chocolate, just for that little bit of a treat.
But then also you don't have you don't you shouldn't eat them every day, you know. So, and I think that's also something, is that we've had to now look at planning and look at your, so look at the events. Just sit down for 10 minutes with yourself and look at all the events that you have in a week and go, I know that that restaurant does a fabulous crème brûlée. That's where I will have the crème brûlée. But I'm not eating a pudding at every function. Last year we went through a December where our sales manager and I had 17 meals in November up to the middle of December that we had to have out with guests.
That's insane. I mean, that's overload. I mean, you just don't want to eat that for the rest of the
It's
year.
absolutely. You know, but you do. You get to a point where you actually go, you would think you'd never get tired of eating out. Nah, I was finished.
One thing that I found quite interesting, there was a study, I hate using the word study because you never know who does the study, but this was quite fascinating. What they did was challenge, I think there was 80 office workers to do to climb stairs. But 30 to 30 seconds of stair climbing. So they went up 2 floors. I think it was 3 times a day, and they changed nothing else, but they measured everyone's fasting glucose. And after, I think, about 2 weeks, and everyone had done their stairs for only 30 seconds, there were significant changes to that glucose. So, and I don't know if it was done before meals or after meals. I think it was pretty random. It was a bit of a thumbsuck thing, but this, the outcome was quite significant, and it wasn't controlled. So you don't know if people went and suddenly became really good at what they were eating, and I'm sure they didn't because there was a fair number of people. But what it did say was that just moving a little bit more will pay you dividends. And there's also a lot to be said going for a walk after a meal, just so that your body utilizes even the worst meal a lot more efficiently. And I know it's a little bit difficult to go for a walk at night in Joburg or anywhere in South Africa, but just do so, you know, eat earlier, move more. Just moving more is so helpful. And
Yeah, it doesn't have to be the 45 or an hour, or in fact, it shouldn't be an hour and a half in the gym, ever.
definitely not. Ever. You know, your 15 minutes of high intensity interval training, especially for women, is super effective for body composition. I know, like, you know, Discovery likes us to get 30 minutes in, and that's fine, but 15 minutes of like hard work, and everyone's got 15 minutes, is so beneficial. And it doesn't have to be every day either. It can be 4 times a week, and you'll see a massive difference. But it also affects your mind, so depression, for stress, for anxiety, and it lowers your cortisol levels. So I think in the holiday season as well, because we're not working, you do have time. You can find 10 to 15 minutes, and you can make it social. If you manage to do nothing else, just move.
Yeah, I remember. So I had Dutch grandparents, and I remember it was a Sunday afternoon thing. Was that you know, we do Sunday afternoon nap. With them, it was Sunday afternoon after dinner, after all the dishes have been washed, before tea, we would go and walk around the neighborhood, you know, and check people's houses out. Now I know that now these days some of us live in neighborhoods that we couldn't do that. But it is. It just makes you feel so much stronger. And I mean, I've told you the story before. I have done very little exercise this year. And I started chair yoga. Okay, I'm an old lady. I started chair yoga. And you know what I found is it's changed my posture. So, and just that posture change makes me feel more comfortable. And I also find that I cope much better because I am not, I am a person that has, my job entails sitting in front of a computer most of the day. And that's so bad for me, you know, and my body just didn't handle it well. Where now with a chair yoga, my body's actually handling it much better. So, and that's literally 15 minutes every morning. And I do it All working days. I don't necessarily do it on the weekends because my routine just flies out the window. But yeah, and we do. We have 15 minutes.
We do. And you know, when you're exercising, you're sleeping better. When you're sleeping better, you're craving less sugar. When you're craving less sugar, you're less likely to get sick and a massive issue. So what would you say is your top three tips for someone who may have been diagnosed with PCOS or may not yet have been diagnosed? What are your three top tips for someone who really just doesn't want to suffer anymore?
So I think it is about in with regards to lifestyle changes, it is about, as with every kind of metabolic kind of disease, it is about having a look at what you're eating and when you're eating, and trying as far as possible to get away from processed foods. So eat it as, I'm not a raw food person, but eat it in a state where it would have been natural. So eat a steak rather than boerewors, because boerewors has got bread in it. Eat things, anything with a colorant in it, anything with a sauce on it. All sauces are, the only sauces we can eat are the Nando's sauces. Not, I'm not sponsored by them. But the Nando's sauces don't have sugar in them, they have xylitol in them. But all other sauces, and those are the ones that I've found just in general, I'm not talking about health store stuff now. All sauces are loaded with sugar, and sugar is not your friend. So you're going to have to cut the sugar. Sorry, honey. So look at a sweet alternative if you really struggle. So first thing is look at your diet. Second thing is try and cut out sugar, no, cut out processed foods. And third thing is try and cut out sugar and educate yourself. Because, you know, we all go, watermelon is so healthy. Not for you when you've got PCOS. There's very little nutritional value, and it's fibrous, but not enough. It's too high in sugar. You shouldn't be eating it. Okay. And then my third thing is keep an apple in your bag. You know, because you can eat apples and you can eat berries. Those are the things.
And built on.
And biltong, yes, biltong's the best. We have biltong in South Africa. We forget about that. But keep something close at hand. But also, don't be too hard on yourself. This isn't a death sentence. It's very manageable. It's just that in our environment, I think we've become so used to instant food, instant. You know, get it from the takeout. You're going to have to change that.
Yeah, I think that'll go a long way to helping most people sort out most problems when it comes to diet, is exactly that. It's really simple.
And also, it shouldn't be expensive. So many people go, but it's so expensive. If you're actually eating right, and you're eating enough fruits and vegetables in your day, and you add in your healthy proteins, you don't need to go out and buy the expensive Jim Bunny whey powder. Don't do that. Okay, xylitol is expensive. The xylitol argument. Xylitol is expensive, but we go to Clicks and we buy the 3 for 2, and then it lasts us for 4 months because we've also lost our sweet tooth. So that happens.
No, it's actually cheaper when you start doing the math. You know, many people use that excuse, it's too expensive to eat healthy. It's really not. It is actually a fraction of the cost, and your better quality food is more satiating, so you get more satisfied on less. So you ultimately end up eating less. Food addiction is expensive. Processed food is, if you do the math, it's very expensive. Yeah, there's so much you can do. You just got to want to, and I think that's the message. You've got to be up against the wall that there's no choice now. This is life. You've got to make those choices. The message is never going to change, but also ask for help. Get help when you can, and get the support when you can. That's really important.
Find someone that will help you that re you relate to. Because I mean, we can be advised to go to this fantastic, I know this fantastic whatever, and you go there, and the person has wants you to be totally vegan. Not that I have anything against being vegan, but it's not a lifestyle that I would ever choose for myself. And there are all kinds of rituals that you have to be involved with. No, it's not going to work for me. Sorry, your
Right.
program, you know. And also, as I say, be kind to yourself and don't try to change it all in a day. That's the worst thing you can do to yourself, because there will be kickback. You will go back to where you were if the program is impossible to follow.
Yeah, if you can't live on it, don't start it. I completely agree. And you know, when you somebody you can relate to and someone you can have an honest conversation with. And so often we go to specialists and doctors and people who we think are going to solve our problems, but we can't actually have an honest conversation with them. We feel like we can't be ourselves. And with any relationship, you've got to be able to put things on the table and say where it's working and not working for you. So that's, I think that's a critical part of, you know, where things work or don't work.
And I'm also a great
Yeah.
believer in there's you always have you can always get a second opinion.
Definitely.
Be careful though, because sometimes we search for what we want them to tell us. So if the second opinion is the same as the first opinion, maybe it's me.
Yes.
But get a second opinion.
Okay, so anyone listening, I hope that you have gained some really good insights from this conversation today. It's food for thought. I hate using that cliche, but it really is. Just think before you do it, whatever it is. And have a fabulous festive season and come back healthier. And it is possible to not put on weight over the holidays. And Karen, thank you so much for your time today. It was a fabulous conversation, and it's
Such a pleasure.
really sort of simplified something that can be very complicated or overcomplicated for many people. It really is important to just get back to the simple message. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It's been fabulous.